Nancy Pelosi gave the floor to Joseph Bachstein. Bachstein, would you like to share your insights? Do you invite me just to talk? Well, I also won't speak about what I should have spoken about. I will continue the, what Katya has been, Katya's way of thinking, but I won't put it as gospel truth. It seems that this pathos that Katya has in her presentation, I'm really an aged pensioner, so there's no pathos left with me. So I would really speak about as things stand indeed. Maybe the modality of this criticism, of this modality of assertion, or you may assume the modality of how things stand indeed. Well, you may be confused about what I'm saying, but I'll try to make a coherent presentation. First of all, education, because I was invited to conference on education. I would have to say that education is nearly the same as enlightenment. Well, I'm interested in the aspect of enlightenment in terms of, it's like an introduction. First of all, we must answer the questions as to...
So, when we speak about the lost truth, we should speak about the art. Is it, does it exist or not? So, I think that the question should be asked quite a different way. For example, do we have art right now or it has died long ago? Just something which has nothing to do, which was called art long before. So, everybody speaks about money, and I think that one of the most interesting articles which I have read was called The Capital and Art of Justice, the dialectism of the relations between capital and justice was quite specific. So capitalism won, unanimously won, and this is the reality in which we live, actually. So there are no any other attempts to avoid this fact, so any such attempts would be inefficient. So my main idea is that we should look what happened to the art as an institute, as a professional identity institute. We should look what place education holds in this system. We should realize the specifics of the fine arts, for example. So, but the situation is quite unique because the state pays for the culture, for cinema, for theater, and this way generates quite a unique product. So this was uniqueness. So everything is a production. Cinema, theater, literature were regarded as a production. Production as industry, but artist, painter is just an individual who is one-on-one with his canvas, so he's a craftsman. And I talked to Mr. Grosten, and he said that video and photograph, our times plays quite a great role, just because this is a stage of democratization, meaning that people get back to the roots of the art, and we see now some side effects, some very negative consequences of that. The specifics of the uniqueness of the art is something very important, because until we have this specification of the uniqueness, specifical uniqueness of the art, I think that we'll have art. The art will prevail, but the history of the art of the 20th century, this is a history of different attempts of combating circulation of art, of cloning and copying art, of spreading it. And I think that video materials, video installation is, well, Video is something which reproduces different materials, and video installation is a unique thing, so video installation may be opposed to just video culture. And this is quite unique for Russia, that we divide different institutions into commercial and non-commercials. So there are some... So still inside the ISO building we have a museum which is non-commercial or commercial, I do not know. So this division into profit and non-for-profit organizations, I think this is quite artificial. So there are quite different strategies of making money, nothing like that. And the person who is most successful in this business, despite the fact if he uses budget means or private means, so he would be more successful in life. So and it depends on the technologies which a person uses. So there are different types of laundering budget money, both here in Russia and in the West. There are some social orders to arrange the this biennial, for example, in some shady houses or maybe in palaces, so it will be fulfilled. So it's just one of the ways to use money and to make money. So the final victory of capitalism ended this our postmodernist period, which started in 1968 in Prague and in Paris. I mean the students' revolt. So and 1991, the collapse of the Soviet Union. The collapse of the Soviet Union and a very huge era, actually, which we have not realized the scale of these changes, and I think that our generation was very fortunate to be witness to these changes. So, the pathetic of the Russian classics that a poet in Russia is more than just a poet, and an artist is something not very good. So I think that this quote is very fundamental, and it helps us to understand the attitude of people towards the artists or the painters. And I think the fine art is something very highbrow, is something very segregated, is something of an elite. And so exclusiveness is just another word of this elite direction. For example, exclusiveness means that a person can penetrate where other people would not be allowed in. Exclusiveness also means that this is some unique, some exclusive production. A thing that a craftsman makes in his own workshop. And I think that the vertical of power is also a very important notion which we can use not only in the political sciences but also in the art. The vertical of power is supported by different means. In Madrid, for example, in December, I attended a fair, and well, the fair and this exhibition as well, these conferences, well, they play a role of a candy. I would say that this is something very tasty which people are eager to attend. Once again, I would like to pay attention to draw attention to the fact that Biennale and the exhibition also marks the division between the commercial and non-for-profit, for example, events. So why in Madrid the fear was very, very interesting. There was a huge number of different round tables and symposia. So everything was very interesting, very spectacular. But why philosophers are so popular in Spain? So there were a lot of painters and artists, but well, yes, maybe, but philosophers were more popular there because they support the vertical, the vertical of power. So the art is very democratic, and that's why it is of no need for the power, for the authority. So the philosophers who interpreted different ideas, who interpreted different things, they were very important for the authority, and I made a discovery. I tried to realize what the specifics of the fine arts, of the war arts. I tried to interpret the fact that so probably there are some artists who determined the whole era of painters. Van Gogh, Cézanne, and maybe someone more, and they all of them were self-educated people. I like very much Gauguin, Van Gogh, and Cézanne. They were self-educated painters, just like Malevich and Kandinsky. They painted rather poorly, and Kulik, he can do just only small things, and his aides, his apprentices, they do the rest. So before Advance Guard and during the Advance Guard period and after the Advance Guard, after the 1917, I think, different qualities of professionals were reshaped, were rephrased. For example, pre-Moscow conceptualism and so on, so both. Some people start criticizing, and so if a person criticizes for many years, it means that the gesture is very serious, and we should understand his philosophy, his idea. We should be aware of his idea, and so this gesture is some unavoidable attribute of trait of what we are all doing. So this elite component, I think, may be manifested by criticism, by something like that, by scolding. So another my discovery was as follows. I can return back to the idea of professionalism and art. So everybody can work. So there is no need to have any specific knowledge about music, about painting, or whatever. There is no need to have the knowledge as the filmmakers have. So nothing is needed a priori. You don't need it. You should be persistent. You should be convincing, and only after that, after the year of working of criticism, you become a painter, you become an artist. So, and the same thing happens to the photograph and video art. I think that these are most democratic arts. Yes, photograph was the most, for example, democratic one and most widespread, when you could take photos yourself very simply. It started as an art in the very beginning, when it required specific skills, and it ends with specific skills, because the modern picture is also regarded as a painting, as a canvas, so it differs very much from quite an ordinary photo, quite an ordinary image or picture. So probably some vague idea, but how many pictures do we have in the world? So there is some multitude of photos. So, and mathematicians, they say that there are different multiples or multitudes, limited, unlimited, and so, for example, when there is a line, you can have also continuous multitudes. So you cannot count all the photos, all the pictures in the world. That's why I had to somehow find some other ways to make the photos a unique object. So my idea here is as follows. I would like once again to draw attention that the epoch, the era in which we lived was quite great. So the modernism ended. The modernity era ended in 1991. But the most interesting thing is that the Enlightenment period also ended. Enlightenment is when someone enlightens another person. So the presumption of the knowledge which a person has and he wants to pass it on to his student. And so it turned out that this moment, this thing, due to some democratization of the process, somehow was no longer adequate to the situation. So for many years we've been speaking about such ideas, about such thing. So the students, they know quite more than their professors, than you and me. For instance, probably I would not like to speak more about this idea, but the Enlightenment era is over, and nothing is more evident. So, once again, probably we are appealing to the vertical of power in order to preserve this, our art identity. So that's why probably we would need this vertical of power, and it should be preserved and supported. Education, enlightenment, and archive, these are three synonyms actually, three terms which are synonymous. So there is a struggle between discourse and capital, and discourse fights to keep its status of archive, and capital is counter-archive actually. So it spreads very quickly. This is radical democratizing tool. So this is our main enemy, and on the other hand, you see that the person who gives, he will never be poor.
Well, in point of fact, I suppose something was published about somebody licking and biting. I suppose our attitude to capital is very much similar. Somebody is licking and biting at the same time. And we're saying to some sponsors, look, e-book, idea, art, enlightenment, well, object to me, they say, look, what sort of rubbish are you saying? Your point is to decorate the houses of the rich. All the other trimmings are not needed. Well, there are various techniques for that. The technique may be about this balance of vertical and horizontal, balance of profit versus non-profit should be kept. This is actually what we are here for. But we've got few chances to succeed. So I have become a minor bureaucrat at the Ministry of Culture because I thought that working for some boss is wrong. And again, I was raised in the Soviet Union, so I resent working for a private individual, for private property, but I'm always ready to work for the government, for the state. Thank you. That's it. Well, here you are. Please give the mic to the speaker. Judging by the reaction of the audience, that indeed everybody, every percent is right. Indeed, I would like to speak, address to everybody whom I have heard today, all the panelists. It's clear, capitalism has won, it's all clear about art, that generally speaking is done to be bought. Well, actually it it's done not just for the fun, can use the artist. It's a product, it should go somewhere. The very fact that it is prepaid before it has been created, is there not a point in favor of this position of it? But in the context of this conference, in the context of education and its role in the development of modern art, contemporary art, as for example, so that it should exist in some way, should not be lost, diluted. What is still the role of an artist in your view? And what is the point of the product that he produces? But today, in today's situation, because you were saying, you were discussing various strategies when people communicate, and this is great. Also, when that all art is completely commercialized, it has been pre-purchased. But still, what's the role of the artist for today? What is the artist for? And what do you do with his product? What to discuss, it should be solved. Well, look, the question you're asking, have you given a thought? But who is asking this question? Look, what is important? If it is the artist who asks, clearly he can exist for himself to create, to realize his intellectual and sensual perception. But it is the consumer who asks it. Yes, indeed it exists for the there is a third point here, at least one of the points probably, that generally speaking, society is there too, and the social functions, and an artist has a special function in this society, and the very fact that there are so-called strategies of public intervention are quite successful in many cases, which bring about some, I wouldn't say global, but nevertheless social shifts, to some social changes, not shifts really, but changes. Well, it would have been great, and sometimes this is the case, because very often we've got the so-called allowed negativity. Clearly, art should have been play a special role when we are undergoing the reconstruction of society. And if you are saying that it is capable to restore what you are saying it can, it would have been great, but I would like to hear examples, because very often we've got the case with the permitted form of protest, which is being immediately commercialized.
This
situation in the Russian that everybody is busy doing his own business. Before that, art had a special public mission. Tolstoy is a visionary, a teacher. But now it looks there are no specialists for everything. Spin doctors. Everything has been commercialized. And what about the artist? He's the one, he's just like a clown who decorates houses. But then can we talk at all about the problem of profit and non-for-profit? Surely though, we should talk about it. Because if I'm right, in a sense that there is this existence between profit and non-for-profit, it should be reproduced. And this is what the market is interested in, because they subsidize these markets. We are here at the expense of Art Moscow. At least we don't have to pay admission to get here. Well, that's good. So non-for-profit projects should be there. Otherwise, even for-profit projects will soon exhaust themselves. Because we should have some room for an artist to feel like they are real artists. And that should be there. And it should be subsidized by government, by various foundations. Otherwise, the machine, the car, will break down. And this is what we're saying. There are structures that are reproducing themselves, and an artist occupies a special place in them. And Hopshler put it, these super aesthetic ideas are not of any interest to anybody. It has all been nationalized. It is also a way and a type of social order, or like private and public partnership and cooperation. That's just totally different situation we're facing. Пожалуйста, вот у меня есть комментарий на английском языке. Зависит все от того, где вы задаете такой вот вопрос. Потому что, например, я побывал на Ближнем Востоке, там ситуация абсолютно различная. Возможно, там нет конкретного рынка, нет системы поддержки, независимо от того, подает хоть у нас государство или частных лиц. Но интересно то, что и художники, и писатели действительно чувствуют, что у них есть силы. Они знают, что то, что они делают, каким-то образом оказывает влияние на развитие национальной культуры. В США этого абсолютно нет, потому что чувствуешь себя маленьким муравьишкой против махины Голливуда. Поэтому вот, ну, в целом нельзя этого вот обобщить. Right. In the United States, Anton may not disagree with me, but in point of fact, the non-for-profit component, just because the United States, the government does not support art in direct way at least, but via tax rebates or something. It has very strong traditions of art support beyond the market. And since these traditions are not so much developed in Europe, that is why in the 1990s the government withdraws its support from this sphere. And then the market begins to exercise, to exert enormous pressure. But then Jean-Pierre Martin, which was for many years director of Kunstpalast, museum in Düsseldorf, now has to leave this museum because the pressure that the sponsors exert, like Rorgas, the counterpart of Gazprom, has become so huge that as a protest he leaves his post. Even in civilized Germany this has happened. It's been long that I was in America, but I suppose there is this sort of balance which is supported. Maybe what is going on in Eastern Europe, because in Russia there is this sort of Russian faith, Russian civil society, you can talk for a long time about it. But indeed, the community in Russia doesn't have this, how shall I call it, its own political credo, political statement. Indeed, it's completely, how shall I put it, withdrawn into some special relationship with the market or with the institutes of power. That it, what, this is what makes the situation in this country different from Eastern Europe or elsewhere, where artistic community has got a voice of its own, has got its own value. I still feel that this is the main product, the so-called resistance, is actually the main product which is required to this or that extent, because it very much is determined by the context of existence of this or that artist, be it in the United States or here. So actually it's clear that it's not fund by some sort of landscapes. We would like to have some sort of something built in to this landscape, like Amara Milamid did, that a certain element of resistance should be there, some eye catcher should be there, so that it should give reason to talk, so that we should start some sort of conflict. Conflict like a way to discuss something like, because if there's no conflict, there's no talk. When people have exhausted all subjects, there's nothing they can talk about it. There's no subject for discussion. So there's no contradiction at all here, as I feel it, globally. No contradiction. Good, no contradiction. Another question. I suppose I have a question towards all the panelists, to what we're discussing today about artistic education. Because if we talk in general, many allowances that we make, for me, it's like something that has its worth in history. It's some sort of liberal concept which has built and imposed by rationalism, by the Enlightenment, and therefore when we talk about artistic education and various forms of institutionalization, various forms of social functioning and so on, we still stay within the framework of this liberal context. But things that are going on during globalization and at the same time something that the appearance of some local centers of resistance. But so many of these liberal concepts are not being questioned by the process of modernization, non-European, non-Western modernization. An example is just what's going on in China nowadays. When we see independent centers, independent galleries spring up, say, far away from Beijing, there is a village inhabited by 1,500 artists. They 500 are doing some traditional things, while 1,000 are doing some untraditional, new, innovative art. So in this context, when modernization is going on by not through rationalization, but through some other ways, how will these liberal concepts be working, say, like concept of artistic education? What are the non-institutional, non-market forms of artistic education? Because I feel another subject that I've heard discussed today is the dictate of market. Because the market is another concept, a modernistic concept. Its history began in late 18th, early 19th century. And it seems like this story may be exhausting itself. It may be hard to prove it, but I won't be going into it. But my question is, if it is possible, and if it is, in what forms and in what strategies, is artistic education feasible beyond the framework of European Enlightenment concepts? I didn't understand the question. I didn't understand anything. First of all, why do the Chinese painters live in one village? Do they have to? Is it the result of the Cultural Revolution? Well, this seems important. Why do they all turn up in one village? Because they want to be liberated from the market or something. Oh, it means that they went there on their own. That they bought houses. It's all very important because you're construing a situation which is vague and abstract, and we must talk about this idyllic situation.
So when then you just are saying that something was imposed on us. For example, you say some very silly things. For example, that there are some ideas were imposed on us. For example, we use handkerchiefs and probably we should get rid of that as well. So quite a utopic picture, I think, that without just economic, for now economic reasons and now economic basis, artists went to go to live in the village and live there. So probably our previous presentation was rather pessimistic and we are all tired. So we are speaking that the market won and we just left the battlefield. So I don't think that this is true. This is not my point of view. I think that we should stop all those symbolic forms of resistance. The art is very good because though it launches some symbolic resistance, so that's good, but it is not sufficient actually, because art can create some real forms of resistance, some alternative forms of existence, which would be alternative to new art types, new shapes, new forms of capitalism and capitalistic existence. For example, there's no such a thing when an individual artist sells an individual or some unique painting to an individual to a unique buyer. So I think that art may resist to, by political means. So, for example, our artists would, for example, sometime show their political initiative, but still we are engaged in some symbolic resistance, which is not good. So, well, still I see the situation quite clearly. Well, about the capitalism, let it go to hell. I just had such an idea, like that I don't know if the painters should go to the barricades. So painters are very much involved in the social order, and it will never happen. The Moscow conceptualism was one of the most successful projects in the post-war Russia, the post-war Moscow. It was some social alternative, not a political alternative, but the situation was quite different. And now I think that sometimes I'm asked, Joseph, you are this and that, you know this and that, you support the government, you support the state. And usually I say, well, my generation faced a very important historical task, the dissolution of the Soviet state, and this task was successfully implemented. And one generation never has two tasks, and at such a moment I usually pause and quote the famous Russian poet. I love your ideas, and I'm ready to play this role, but this time we have another drama, and I will not participate in it. So, that's from Pasternak, from his Hamlet. So, thank you very much, and I think that we can put an end to that, and tomorrow we'll proceed on with our conference. So, after the lunch tomorrow, there will be a round table, the Russian-speaking round table. Thank you very much, and see you tomorrow.